Last week, some 600 Shakespeare scholars came to Prague for the 9th World Shakespeare Congress, an international academic event that has previously been held in such cities as Brisbane, Berlin, or Los Angeles. Among the guests was the Australian scholar Peter Holbrook, a member of the International Shakespeare Association's Congress Committee and author of a book titled Shakespeare's Individualism. I spoke to him about his central thesis, Shakespeare research in different countries, and what his experience at the Congress has been like.
It's been wonderful. The plenary sessions in particular have been fantastic. We've had speakers from all over the world because this is an international Shakespeare Congress. And being in Prague, what a joy. It's just such an extraordinary place.
And is such an international congress, even for a seasoned Shakespeare scholar like yourself, open up new perspectives?
Absolutely. The thing about Shakespeare is that he isn't, this is often said, isn't really anymore, if he ever was, simply an English author. You know, he's an author who's been taken up by so many different lands and peoples and cultures. And this process goes back a long, long way. So one of the things about this conference is that it brings people from all over the world to talk about Shakespeare in their own cultural experience. And so, for example, one of the things that I find in Czech and talking to my Czech colleagues is how different an experience it is to read English literature and Shakespeare in particular in the context of recent political history. I mean, this is a country that has had a lot of suffering under a dictatorial and authoritarian regime, and that's very interesting to me, you know, because Shakespeare has so often been a figure who is associated with freedom. And so studying an author like that under the Soviet era in Czechoslovakia, which I don't know nearly enough about this, but I have got an inkling of what that experience was like, is so very, very different from studying Shakespeare in America or Britain or other countries you could name.
And how would you say, what is the main difference in reception of Shakespeare, say, in Central and Eastern Europe as compared to English-speaking countries?
I'm no expert on that, but one thing that's very clear is that and this came out in Martin Hilsky's wonderful talk for the plenary lecture earlier in the week, and also in his account of the history of the National Theatre in Prague. And what I was absolutely fascinated to find out there was that Shakespeare was central to the mid-19th century, late 18th century, move for national self-determination in the Czech lands. And he gave us a wonderful account of the Shakespeare Festival that took place in 1864 in Prague as part of the National Theatre movement, which was really to commemorate the 300th anniversary of Shakespeare's birth. And it's quite clear that love of Shakespeare in this part of the world, strangely enough, combined with love of one's native land. I find that fascinating.
So now a bit about yourself, very straightforward question, but may I ask you when your interest in Shakespeare began or what sparked it?
Most people say, when asked that question, they say it was a school teacher. In my case, I can't say that that was true, and even in my early university years, I can't really recall feeling that Shakespeare was absolutely central. I do remember reading Hamlet, though, at home in my first year of university, being completely bewildered by it. Actually, when I say bewildered, I mean simply not understanding what was going on. And I don't think I returned to Shakespeare for a couple of years, but it was in postgraduate study at Yale University in the United States when I was very, very fortunate to take a Shakespeare class with a very famous scholar, sadly now no longer with us, and that was George K. Hunter. He published as G.K. Hunter. He was a magnificent teacher. He was a slightly fearsome scholar. He couldn't tolerate vagueness or silliness or not doing the work. He used to scare off quite a few students. Somehow or other, I stuck with him, and that changed my life.
And now Shakespeare is certainly a very prolific playwright, poet, author simply. Is there any part of his work that you specialize in or that your research especially focuses on?
I just wrote a book that came out last year called Shakespeare's Individualism. And in that book, I was really interested in the ways in which ideas of liberty and freedom, individuality, authenticity circulate in Shakespeare's works. And the great thing about that topic is that you find that stuff everywhere in Shakespeare. So I wouldn't say that I have a particular bit of Shakespeare that I work on. I'm interested in the whole thing.
I believe your book has been called by some provocative. What do you think prompts people to think that your thesis is provocative?
That's nice of you to have remind me of that, because yes, I'm quite proud of that. Yes, it's provocative because, you know, it takes very seriously, I think, the idea of freedom. Often we talk about freedom in a sort of namby-pamby way, you know, freedom's a nice thing and so on. But when you think about it, freedom so often involves conflicts and problems. And if you're to be free, can I therefore be free? And what am I free to do? Anything at all? Or only certain things? And so on it goes. So if you take the concept of liberty and individuality seriously, then I think you run into moral and political problems and contradictions. And I think that Shakespeare's plays show that. You know, for example, some of the freest characters in Shakespeare, Richard III, for example, or Iago, or Aaron the Moor, a terrible sort of psychopath in the play called Titus Andronicus, not so well known as, say, Hamlet or Othello. These people are very free. They're also really bad. I was interested in that paradox.
And you also teach at the University of Queensland. If you look at your students today and their reactions to Shakespeare or their interest in Shakespeare, do you think that differs at all from your generation of students, or is there any kind of change in how young people today approach Shakespeare?
That's a very good question. It's a very hard question to answer because there's a lot of thinking about this, and I'm not sure who's right. Some people say young people today don't want to or can't read as extensively as people of my generation. Other people, so they say, well, what you've got to do is present material visually and in other media. One can see where they're coming from. My own view, but I can't prove this, is that taught properly, patiently, carefully, young people today can read Shakespeare just as well, if not better, than people in the past. I mean, there's more help now for them to understand hard words and, you know, unfamiliar cultural contexts and whatnot. So I don't think so, really. I think that I'm probably am going to answer that question by saying that I think that young people today can enjoy Shakespeare and understand Shakespeare just as well as their counterparts in earlier times.
And now maybe someone who isn't as well versed in Shakespeare or doesn't really, you know, look at him in a scholarly way would say, well, what else is there new to say about Shakespeare? We've been studying him for so long. Is there new and original research on Shakespeare, and what are some of the more kind of provocative or even groundbreaking academic works on Shakespeare that may have come out in recent years?
That's a great question, and it's true. It's a good question. You know, how can you keep studying the stuff that's been around for so long? You know, I think the answer is that it's not just, it's that we change. We human beings, we live in particular places, particular times. And what that means is that when we look at the past, we're looking at it from our own moment, you know, and our own interests and our own understandings. So to give you an example, I think that, say, a century ago or even 50 years ago, if you had said that Othello is a play largely about race and it's about the tragedy of racial misunderstanding and of the manipulation by a villain, Iago, of racial stereotypes, you know, convincing Othello that a white woman could never love him because he's a black man. If you had said that the tragedy was a tragedy of race, people would have thought you were a little crazy. I mean, yeah, Othello is a Moor, but really this is a tragedy of love, or, you know, of destiny, or some other category. So I think that that's an example. Now we see that, but of course that's because in the intervening period we've had whole waves of racial liberation movements, of renewed consciousness about cultural and racial difference, and so on and so forth. So we see things in the plays that previous generations could not actually see. They're there, it's just that they couldn't be seen. So I think that's an example. And the list goes on and on of the ways in which contemporary concerns have been brought to bear on the plays and yielded new insights. That process can go too far, of course. We should always keep Shakespeare at the centre. I believe, anyway, that we are trying to understand Shakespeare. But in understanding Shakespeare, we're also learning more about ourselves, and we're bringing our own interests into relationship with that writer.
For the uninitiated reader who may want to pick up a work by Shakespeare but is maybe slightly intimidated, what would be your tips how to start reading Shakespeare?
Okay, well, the first thing that I think you should do is not be scared. Many people have read Shakespeare, so anyone out there who's listening and thinks it's too hard for me, I don't think that's right. Why not just get the text and read it? Don't read the notes, don't bother with commentary, just get, they're quite short, you know, you can read a Shakespeare play in an evening, maybe two evenings if you want to take a little bit more time with it. Don't worry about not understanding every word in it. Remember, Shakespeare's original audience included many people who were illiterate or close to illiterate. Therefore, they could not possibly have understood all of the intricacies of his expression and thought. And so that's my first tip. Just get the play and read it from, you know, end, beginning to end. Don't worry about notes or introductions. And then, possibly, go back and reread it. You'll get much more on the second time. And then start to gradually explore the play with a good guide or text that gives you some help with difficult words. It's not that hard. The other thing that I would recommend is doing it with some other people. It's fun to have a group where you read together and can help each other.
Peter Holbrook is an Australian Shakespeare scholar who was in Prague for the 9th World Shakespeare Congress last week.